Good morning. My name is Pat Ward. I'm the administrative law judge pursuant to temporary appointment designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings upon the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as the procedural hearing officer for this consolidated hearing. This is the hearing on the application of NSP for, one, an advanced determination of prudence for three natural gas generators, and two, a certificate of public convenience and necessity for two natural gas combustion turbines. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission case number PU-13-194 and PU-13-195. The record will show that it is a little past 8:30 a.m. Central Standard Time, Tuesday, November 26, 2013, at the PSC Commission Hearing Room, 12th floor, State Capitol, Bismarck, North Dakota. The time, date, and place set by the Notice of Filing and Consolidated Notice of Hearing issued by the North Dakota Public Service Commission on October 9, 2013. On April 26, 2013, NSP filed its application for an advanced determination of prudence to add three 215-megawatt gas-fired combustion turbine generators to its system, one unit known as Black Dog 6 to be constructed in Burnsville, Minnesota, and two in Hankinson, North Dakota, to be known as Red River Valley Units 1 and 2. NSP also requested on April 26, 2013, in case PU-13-195, a certificate of public convenience and necessity for Red River Valley Units 1 and 2. The application and request are set forth in the notice of filing and notice of hearing, and the proposed location is shown by the map, which is part of the notice. The notice of filing and notice of hearing for this hearing specified the following issues to be considered and determined upon this hearing. The issue regarding the ADP is, one, whether NSP's proposed investment in the three CTs is prudent. The issues regarding the certificate of public convenience and necessity are whether public convenience and necessity will be served by the NSP construction and operation of the combustion turbines, and two, whether applicant is fit, willing, and able to provide the service. I have previously entered a trade secret protection order in this case dated November 13, 2013. We'll state our appearances for the record. Mr. Simpson.
Zev Simpson, Briggs & Morgan, on behalf of Northern States Power Company.
Allison Archer with XL Energy.
Thank you. And for the commission?
Thank you, Your Honor. On behalf of Commission Advocacy Staff, Ryan Norell, and with me at table are Mike Diller and Sarah Cardwell, Public Utility Analysts.
And any other appearances today?
Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant Attorney General, Advisory Staff for the Commission. With me is Jerry Leon, a Public Utility Analyst with the Commission.
Thank you. If there is anyone present today other than witnesses for NSP or the commission who will or may testify or comment concerning this matter, please identify yourself. Looking around the room, it doesn't appear that there is. If someone does show up, we'll take care of that later. Any opening remarks by the commissioners before we start the actual proceedings?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just thank the company for the work they've done putting this case together. I always appreciate that. Same as both sides of staff, all the work. I've read, the pre-filed testimony, and Mitch and Jerry and I have talked about this one a lot. Just a couple quick thoughts is that my comments about this particular case when I first heard about it was that this is as close to a layup as they come. And so, that's what I said. I still believe that. But I will have a few additional questions today. That one of the things that I picked up at MISO last week, or when I was out at NARUC, was that MISO was predicting they're 8 gigawatts short of power. And I don't remember the exact time frame, but it was like 2020. It was very near term to what this case is. And so I'd be very curious to know if you have an idea what slice of that 8 gigawatts that might be XL Energy's, because my concern is maybe this isn't enough to be built. If you're 8 gigawatts short in the MISO region, somebody needs to start building stuff pretty quick. And that was a concern I expressed with MISO, and it was interesting that I think MISO serves as a function, but their answer was quickly to spin it back around. Well, it's up to the investor owns to build the generation. Well, it is, but it's up to MISO to be able to predict what the demand is so the companies can then go back and build the generation. So that, I guess, is the one line of question that I would have, and just thank you all for your work.
Mr. Christman.
Thank you, Your Honor, and You know, I guess my thoughts on this initially right now are came from a situation that is not even really very close to NSP's service area, but has to do with electrical power in general. Both the last couple years as a hopeful and then sitting commissioner, and then for almost two decades before that in the Senate, I talked a lot about dependable, affordable power as opposed to power that is done for economic development goals or to meet some kind of social programs or anything like that. And over the years, I've built some strong relationships. It didn't come to me as a commissioner, but, you know, people who looked at me as someone they came to with various problems and in the ag community both. And when we had the big snowstorm 6 weeks or so ago, and a good part of southwest North Dakota was without power, and a huge part of western South Dakota was without power, I thought a lot about my common line of dependable, affordable power, like that's one thing as opposed to separable things. And during that whole episode, not one person contacted me and said, geez, what do you think this is going to do to my rates by the time they get these power lines built back up? Or anything about the cost, even. It was all about the reliability and making sure that that power was really on at the time. And so, you know, sometimes I think we maybe even underemphasize the importance of reliability, having power in more than one region being produced and having it close by to population centers and that type of thing. And so that's why I brought that up at this point, because I think it really fits in with this case and the thought of having a power generation supply in the Red River Valley. So that's all I have at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Good morning. I will keep my comments brief, but this hearing today is something that the company, I think, views more as a big picture issue, and it sort of hits home a little closer to home for all of us because of the potential for bringing some generation into our state close to our largest population center. And so while I still, you know, am interested in hearing all the facts and very much undecided on this case at this point, it does resonate. The issues in this case really hit home to all of us, I think, because of that reliability component that Commissioner Christman talked about, and the fact that our state is really growing. We have, you know, huge power demands out west. Our communities, even in the valley, are growing at a much brisker rate than those areas in Minnesota. And so we feel the need to make sure that we have all the power infrastructure in place to serve the growing needs of our state. So a lot of important issues to consider in this case as well, and look forward to the rest of the hearing.
Mr. Zimser, any opening remarks or any business you want to take care of before we proceed?
We'll defer opening remarks to our initial witness, Ms. McCartan. The company would like to move entry into the record of its application and all its pre-filed testimony, as well as, if advisory staff counsel will permit me, advisory staff's pre-filed testimony per previous stipulations.
Any objection to the motion?
No objection, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
No objection.
Those items will be received. Mr. Zimser, or Mr. Armstrong, you wanted to make a motion?
Yes, Your Honor. The commission intends to take official notice of filings in several other cases in reviewing this case, and those filings are PU-13-706, PU-13-708, PU-13-707, PU-13-742, PU-13-743, and PU-12-813. So I move that the commission be allowed to take official notice of the filings and pleadings in those cases.
Mr. Zimser, any objection to that proceeding?
No objection, Your Honor.
In that case, PU 13706, 707, 708, 742, 743, and 12-813 will be admitted and allowed to be used as for reference in this matter. Mr. Zimser.
We have no further. Oh, one item. We have Exhibit 5 is finally printed out, the public version, and we can distribute that as necessary throughout the proceeding.
Okay. You're moving admission of that then? Or have we already admitted?
We've moved admission of that already. With that, we have no other cleanup items, and we're ready to call our first witness.
Okay, please proceed.
The company calls Ms. Laura McCartan to the stand.
Ms. McCartan, I'm required by law in North Dakota to advise you of the law regarding perjury. Perjury is a false statement under oath of a material fact made by a person who knows or does not believe the statement to be true at the time it is made. Perjury is a Class C felony. A Class C felony is subject to a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison, a fine of $5,000, or both may be imposed. Having been advised of the penalty for perjury, please raise your right hand so I can administer the oath. Do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Thank you. You may proceed, Mr. Zimser.
Good morning, Ms. McCartan.
Good morning.
I understand you have an opening statement you'd like to give?
I do.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Calk, Commissioner Christman, and Commissioner Fedorchak, and thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. This hearing involves the company's request for an advanced determination of prudence for our bid proposal to construct 3 natural gas turbines, or CTs. Our proposal was intended to meet a capacity need in the 2017-19 timeframe, as identified in our most recent resource plan. To meet this need, we proposed to construct 3 200-megawatt combustion turbines that we could deploy individually so we could match the expense to the customer need as it developed over time. We propose to first construct the 200-megawatt unit at our existing Black Dog site, the so-called Black Dog Unit 6, because this is the lowest cost of the 3 units. We also propose to construct up to 2 additional 200-megawatt units at a new greenfield site near Hankinson, North Dakota. Our proposal was intended to capture the cost savings available from using the existing infrastructure at the Black Dog site. Units in the Red River Valley were the next most cost-effective additions or alternatives we found on our system and were not proposed just because they are in North Dakota. We have filed this ADP now consistent with our commitments to make a filing in North Dakota around the same time we make similar filings in Minnesota. Our proposal in this proceeding before you is the same proposal we submitted to the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. In the Minnesota process, third parties are allowed to propose alternatives to company-owned proposals, and we're required to analyze all proposals in order to identify the best options for our customers. As a result of our analysis of all the proposals received, we believe that 1 of 2 third-party proposals could be a better deal for our customers than the Hankinson units. Both these third-party proposals entail adding a new combustion turbine at an existing site. We have recommended that we negotiate concurrently with those two bidders and ultimately select the lowest cost outcome along with the Black Dog Unit 6. The company continues to believe that the addition of new generation in North Dakota can be a cost-effective addition to our system. In this circumstance, however, new generation could not overcome the cost advantage of developing at existing sites that already have important infrastructure in place. If we reach agreement with one of the third-party bidders, we will file for an ADP with this commission consistent with our prior commitments. However, if we're unable to reach agreement, our proposal to build CTs at the Hankinson site remains a viable project to pursue, and we are therefore holding the development of the Hankinson CTs in reserve. Even as we are taking these steps today to select resources for our anticipated needs, there continues to be uncertainty around the timing and level of the future need, as well as the best options to meet that need. Our initial forecasted capacity need has now been revised downward to approximately 300 megawatts, as a result of continuing soft demand growth, as well as changing MISO reserve margin calculations. It's possible we may see a further reduction of the forecast of capacity need in the 2017 to 19 timeframe. In light of this uncertainty, the Commission may consider that now is not the time to decide on this. We could come back in 2014 and 2015 to continue to update the Commission on how that future demand need is developing. At today's hearing, we also look forward to addressing the Commission's interest in our development of generation in North Dakota. We appreciate advocacy staff's recognition that our Wynn proposal and the Hankinson proposal demonstrates our commitment to developing generation in North Dakota. The company devoted considerable time and resources to develop our Hankinson proposal. We continue to believe generation near our North Dakota load centers is viable over time and may become even more cost competitive as new gas and electric transmission infrastructure is added in the Red River Valley area. We also recognize advocacy staff's interest in ensuring generation development in North Dakota for energy security purposes. But it's important to be clear that the transmission system that serves the Fargo, Grand Forks, and Minot areas does provide reliable service to our communities and our customers that we serve. We plan and manage our system to maintain such reliable service. And for example, the addition of the CapEx Fargo line will provide a robust additional source into the region to support reliability. While adding generation in the region intuitively appears to provide a reliability benefit, it is not a panacea. Regional reliability requires robust transmission. For example, the Hankinson site is about 70 miles away from Fargo, and it relies on the 230 kV transmission system, or would rely on that, to provide support to the Fargo area. If the Commission would like to explore the reliability benefits of local generation resources in North Dakota, a thorough record should be developed to ensure the Commission can make a fully informed decision, and the record of this proceeding is not sufficient for that purpose. That said, we're very willing to work with staff to explore the development of generation in the region consistent with overall system needs, perhaps as part of a settlement of this case. Finally, I'd like to take this opportunity to note that the company's proposal to add 750 megawatts of wind does not affect our proposal in this proceeding. As was discussed at the wind ADP hearing, our wind proposal is to secure a low-cost energy resource. Moving ahead with those wind projects will lock in attractive pricing for energy that, when available, will offset higher marginal cost generation. In contrast, the proposal before us today is intended to meet a capacity need. That is, a need for additional system generation that we can bring online at any moment to meet customer demand. Thank you, and I look forward to your questions.
Witnesses available for cross.
Mr. Norrell, any questions?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Good morning, Ms. McCartney.
Good morning, Mr. Norrell.
Could you give us a brief update of where the current status is with the Minnesota Competitive Acquisition Resource process?
I would ask you to direct that question to Jim Alders. He's directly involved in that process, and I'm not as up to speed on exactly where that process is. I know we did file comments last Friday, but beyond that, I think Jim would be the best person to speak to.
Would the company have any concerns if the commission, as a result of this hearing or this process, came back to the company with a different recommendation in regards to the size, the type, the timing requirements to meet this need that we're talking about here?
Well, I would ask you to direct that to Jim Alders. In general, I would say that we would very much be interested in the commission's input on that. That's part of what this process is all about. So we certainly do seek that information through the course of this proceeding. And then the question is, how do we stitch together two regulatory processes? But we would want to work with this commission to try to accomplish that.
Along the lines of stitching together two regulatory processes, can you give us from an overall policy standpoint, how would the company go about keeping the commission informed through the negotiation process that's going to be developing in Minnesota in regards to this docket here as well?
To be clear, to make sure I understand, the negotiation process you're referring to, is that the one that I mentioned about negotiating concurrently with those two third-party? Okay. We would want to come up with a process to keep the commission informed that meets the commission's needs. So I think we would just, whatever would be appropriate here, we would be more than willing to do that.
Do you happen to know why, if the company stated its need was for 3 combustion turbines, one of the proposals in Minnesota, I believe it's the Calpine proposal, is for a combined cycle combustion turbine. If you need simple cycle, why are you looking at combined cycle?
I would direct you to ask that question of Steve Wishart. I believe he would be the right person.
In the testimony, there's a lot of talk about the cost, and you mentioned it as well on the stand. Well, what role, in your opinion, does energy security, proximity to load centers, what role does that play in determining determining resources to meet need?
Well, I think we start with what does it take to ensure reliable service, and I appreciate Commissioner Christman's remarks in that regard, and I think that is the very first need that we have to serve, is to ensure that we provide reliable service to our customers and how we do that. I think there's many ways of getting to that point. There's not just one solution, so we try to look for the circumstances that achieves that first goal of reliable service in a way that's also cost-effective over time and meets, you know, any other requirements. So I don't know that location is like the first decision point. I think it's really how do we achieve reliable service and how do we do so cost effectively. Beyond that, I think perhaps Steve Wishart would be another person that could explore that further with you.
I have no further questions.
Mr. Armstrong, any questions?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to follow up on that last question first. As far as the location of the generation, would you at least agree that all other things being equal, that reliability is better when the generation is closer to its service center?
I'm sorry, I don't know that I can answer that because I'm just not a system planning engineer. I think it's such a, you know, all other things being equal, I suppose it would be.
Could you just give me in plain English why the company thinks that these projects that we're here for today are prudent?
So our proposal was 3 combustion turbines, and we felt that these are, well, it's a bit challenging because the ADP before the commission is for 3 projects. The first one, the Black Dog Unit 6, we think all of our analysis has confirmed of all the alternatives, not just the ones that the company has proposed, but even other alternatives proposed by other parties. Black Dog Unit 6 is the best option to move forward with first. With respect to the other 2 projects, I think I would go back. I think they're prudent as proposed. They could be prudent in the future, depending upon how customer demand plays out. But given what I mentioned in my remarks, that customer demand has been changing, in fact, has been reduced, it may be that now is not the time for a decision, an advanced determination of prudency on all of these. We could revisit it in the future. So I think from the time we started and the filing that we made that was consistent with our commitments to make this filing here before this commission at the same time as we make it similar filings in Minnesota, we made this filing. Circumstances have shifted some since then, so it may be that acting on all 3 projects today isn't necessary, and perhaps the commission would want to revisit how demand is playing out in the future before acting on those.
In the legal jargon, what I hear you saying is that maybe the Red River Valley turbines aren't ripe for a decision on prudence yet, aren't ready for one. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know, since I'm not a lawyer, whether I can go there, but I think that with the change in future in our forecast of when customer demand is going to actually materialize and at what level, it may be that we hold these projects and revisit them in the future.
And then revisit, but isn't that what you asked for in the application, though, too, is to build Black Dog and then see where you're at, and then maybe build Red River Valley 1 and then see where you're at, and then maybe build Red River Valley 2 and see where you're at. Isn't that?
You're correct. We did offer an approach that would allow us to deploy them sort of as needed, which we think is prudent. And what we've heard from this commission and others is to spend the money when it's needed or to incur the expense. The difficulty here is the ADP before this commission is for the company-owned proposals. However, as we evaluated all of those relative to other alternatives that could meet our customer need, the two Hankinson units weren't as cost-effective as other units. And so to come up with the most cost-effective option to serve our customers, we believe that the Black Dog unit plus one of those other power purchase agreements would be the ones to act on at this time.
Isn't it so there's a recognized need for more power in the 2017 to 2019 time frame?
For more demand, yes. Or to meet growing demand, yes.
Isn't it better to own rather than to enter these other agreements for the company?
Well, again, I think that question is fairly complicated, and it looks at it can look at a lot of factors of a mix of ownership or power purchase agreements, what gets good prices for customers, what also serves reliability needs. So I don't know that it's just, you know, it always depends on the circumstances and the alternatives you're looking at. And in this case, we would propose one of those projects would be a company owned. That's the Black Dog Unit 6. And then we could secure lower cost energy, which we think would be reliable energy or demand, I should say, from one of those other two power purchase agreements.
So is what I hear you saying is Black Dog 6 is more cost-effective in the company's view than the Red River Valley units?
Correct.
And that's because it's less expensive to build?
I think Greg Ford could answer that question exactly for you. He was the person who was involved in actually developing the cost estimate for the Hankinson units.
Picking out... Well, and I'm going to try and avoid maybe getting into trade secret stuff, but, you know, we can close the hearing if we need to. But can you tell me the difference between the cost in the Black Dog and the Red River Valley unit?
I would not be the person to speak to that. So I think that I think Greg Ford would be the person to speak to that. There's two things. There's what's the cost and then what's the result of the full system analysis, which is the strategist type of analysis that looks at all cost over a long period of time.
And I'm trying to get into what, you know, you've got cost and then you've got the other factors you've talked about. Where does location of the generating facility play into that equation?
Well, again, I think we start with, are we providing reliable service? And we believe we are. We believe that the transmission system that serves our communities in North Dakota provides reliable service. Adding generation locally could provide some incremental additional reliability. The question is, do you do that at a higher cost if you're already providing reliable service? So I don't think location in and of itself as just a pure thing is a factor. We are looking at, are we able to serve reliably and at what cost?
But at least and maybe this is a better question for Mr. Alders because it comes from the table in his testimony, but as I kind of read the table of the options being considered in the Minnesota proceedings, it looked like it was a relatively minor additional cost for the Red River Valley unit, which may provide additional reliability to that region. How do you weigh how much cost is too much for additional reliability?
I think that Steve Wishart could walk through the analysis that shows if you take a deeper dive into the cost, you understand where the cost differences are in early years versus later years, which we think is a relevant piece of information that was part of our decision-making, I think, in understanding that the Hankinson units would be more costly than some of the others. So there is a level of detail that Steve Wishart would be the appropriate person to take you to better answer that question. If I may also add that as I said in my opening remarks, we recognize the commission's interest, advocacy staff's interest in local generation, and we would like to work with the staff and come up with something, perhaps in a settlement, that could be responsive to that. Perhaps not right today, but sometime over a future period. By which I mean the settlement discussions today. So just I'm kind of being Mr. Haney, but...
After 2019, okay, what is the expected use of these projects and need for them? Maybe I can help you out, okay? As I was reading the testimony, I mean, there was a lot of focus on we need this additional power in 2017 to 2019. And I imagine that these aren't being built just to provide power during that time frame. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so what after that are they, what's kind of the long-term plan, if you will?
Well, I think that the 2017-19 time period is when we see that the growth in customer demand requires new resources to come on. So that demand level doesn't just fall off after 19, so you continue to keep those resources to meet that customer demand.
And what's the life of these projects?
I would direct you to Steve Wishart and Greg Ford to speak to the company-owned proposals and some of the PPAs in terms of what the lives of those would be.
And the other two that are being negotiated in Minnesota, do you know the length of the those agreements, what it's likely to be?
I'm not certain, but I think Greg Ford would be the person who could tell you what the likely term of those PPAs would be.
That's all the questions.
What was proposed?
That's all the questions I have.
And Mr. Zinser, any redirect?
Not at this time, Your Honor.
Commissioners, any questions for this witness?
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Laura, for your testimony. I'll try to choose my words wisely, or carefully maybe. Just wrap my head around this. You've got a current rate case in front of this commission with Xcel Energy, correct?
Correct.
And we have a whole bunch of wind projects that you're asking for ADP in front of this commission, correct?
Correct.
And we've got this project that your company filed for an ADP in this gas request.
Yes.
But now you're telling me that you don't really need all this stuff?
Commissioner, when we filed the ADP, we did it, again, consistent with our commitments to do it basically concurrently with Minnesota. And at the time, that the proposals that we put together and developed were to respond to an identified capacity need or demand need in the 2017 to 19 timeframe.
I think your words said, Laura, that now is not the time to decide. Then why didn't you just withdraw your request?
Since we
modify it.
Yeah, so we filed
this hearing today if you don't want us to do anything.
Well, I'm perhaps my words were not well spoken there, Commissioner. I apologize for that. The ADP is a process that we committed to, so we're following through on our commitments. Even over time, as things change, it could be that it's the commission's choice. If the commission wanted to act on these, that's within the commission's
just one
purview.
More quick. And I know this is not the case about this third-party projects, but can you give me a little bit more about what this third-party intervention is? Is it, are they asking for 8,000 solar plants? Are they asking for a bunch of wind turbines? Or is this a co-op? I mean, what is this third-party proposal that has been discussed by you?
Okay. Other parties are able to submit the proposals. There was a proposal to add one proposal was for a company called Invenergy that proposed to build a new combustion turbine at one of its existing sites and sell the power output to us through a power purchase agreement. Another alternative that was submitted in that process was from a company called Calpine that was also to build an additional units at an existing site and to sell that power to us through PPA. There were also alternatives that were submitted in the Minnesota process, including a solar proposal. And I'm not sure if I know all the others.
So when the company files a request for an ADP for two plants in North Dakota, didn't you flesh out some of these other proposals before you'd ever even throw out there the two plants in North Dakota? I mean, it seemed to me that you would do some planning ahead of time before you just say, we're going to have two of these in North Dakota, that you would have done look at North Dakota's tax code, that there would be a good reason why you'd already flushed out other alternatives So that wasn't done. You just said we're just going to build some in North Dakota?
No, we approached it very carefully, Commissioner. We put together the best proposals we could from across our system, and that included two units in North Dakota. We submitted our company-owned proposals into this competitive acquisition process. We did not know what other people would submit, at what price, under what terms. So all of those came in basically at the same time into the Minnesota process, and then we were required to analyze all the proposals that were received. We knew what the cost of our proposals were because we developed them. And then when we looked at the alternatives that were submitted by third parties, we had to go through and evaluate those costs as well and then compare
all
of them.
How do you weigh the... If at 4 o'clock today we have a special meeting and we approve these ADPs as they're submitted, how does that weigh against a third-party proposal that you've already got a approved decision from another jurisdiction? How do you weight that?
You know, and I might ask Jim Alders to kind of walk through what that process is.
This is my next follow-up. So apparently, if the commission in North Dakota decision is not weighted heavily or weighted higher, then we have less jurisdiction than the third party intervening in Minnesota?
I wouldn't say the third party has any jurisdiction. The third party can offer an alternative.
Whatever the word is I'm looking for.
Well, they can offer an alternative, and if that alternative provides the best value to customers, then, excuse me, if our analysis shows that that alternative provides the best alternative to customers or the best value, then we would want to present that information to all of our commissions and say, this is why we think that is the case,
okay,
and hopefully land at the same point.
Thank you, Laura.
Any questions, Commissioner Christman?
Yes, thank you. The third-party recommendations or whatever the term is for them, have you evaluated them and determined that you believe that they are a better alternative than the Red River Valley units, or have you not got, is this still too new to have made that decision?
No, Commissioner, we have taken all of those alternatives through a very rigorous analysis, and Steve Wisher can speak to what that analysis is, but based upon our analysis, we looked at our own company-owned proposals and the alternatives and proposals that came in from third parties. Our judgment is that the best option for our customers would be to build the Black Dog Unit 6 and then to concurrently negotiate with two of those other alternatives to get the best possible price. Both of those looked to be lower cost alternatives to meet our customers' needs than the Hankinson units, and we would propose to go through negotiations to get the best possible price out of those two, perhaps even better the price than what we saw with what they proposed in that process.
So they have a price proposal, but it's not firm. It still has to be negotiated. I'm trying to figure out how, when you don't know the price, you know something's a better alternative.
Based upon what they submitted, it appears to be the lower cost option. We would have to go through negotiation to confirm that once you kind of work out all of the contractual details that you can't really get into until you actually sit across the table and negotiate, we'd have to say, are they indeed, after all of that, the best cost alternatives to our customers? If they're not, we would not intend to proceed with them. And that's why I mentioned that we would want to keep the Hankinson CT units in reserve in case those negotiations don't pan out or lead us to a point where they're really not the most cost-effective option for our customers after the Unit 6 Black Dog.
When you originally did a RFP for additional power, there were many suggestions, wind, solar, one related to a coal company, and you narrowed it down basically to about four wind farms, correct?
I'm sorry, Commissioner, I'm not following you. Are you speaking to the RFP that we did for the wind resources?
Yes.
That began in February? Which is separate from the alternatives that came into this process.
But you didn't, as I recall, you didn't do an RFP for wind resources. You did a RFP for additional generation.
Commissioner,
regardless of source, was it not?
Commissioner, in the wind, earlier this year, we did a request for proposals for wind projects only. With this competitive acquisition process, there wasn't an RFP issued, but there was a notice that was a public notice that said, if other parties want to submit proposals to meet this identified demand or capacity need for XL Energy in the 2017-19 framework, you may do so.
When did that go out?
I'm not sure. I think that Jim Alders could speak to that sometime earlier this year. Several months ago. And that would have been whatever proposals within sort of the timing and type of need that was identified, people could submit proposals.
And the two third-party proposals that have come to light now in the Minnesota ADP case, were those submitted back then as part of that process?
Those two alternatives were submitted as part of the competitive acquisition process. Once that was noticed and that process was open and receiving alternative proposals, those came in at that time. And again, I'm probably getting beyond my knowledge of the exact process, and Jim Alders could for sure answer your questions as well.
Okay, I'll get into more detail on it then. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Good morning.
So tell me what it really is the company seeking today. Because the original application seeks for ADP on the proposal for Black Dog and the two Red River units. And then the November 14th filing goes into a lot of detail about this competitive acquisition process and how all the different proposals shake out and points to a very modest cost difference between Black Dog and Red River Valley and the other two top proposals in Invenergy and Calpine with the Black Dog. So are you seeking approval from us on Black Dog and the alternative proposals or the Black Dog and Red River Valley?
Commissioner, this is a very confusing process. I appreciate this. What's before you is just action on the Black Dog Unit 6 and the two Hankinson units. We are not asking you at this time to act on those third-party projects. We would bring those back to you if we proceeded with a negotiation and found that one of those does meet our customers' needs. We would bring that back to you.
Okay. So then help me understand the Minnesota process. The Minnesota Commission is evaluating the competitive acquisition proposals, right? This CAP. And they will then make a decision saying, here's what we think you guys need to do, or here's what we approve you to do or direct you to do. What will they be deciding?
Commissioner, I would ask that those questions go to Jim Alders. He's very familiar with the process so that I don't create confusion by not being fully responsive.
Okay. Then, and maybe this should go to Jim too, but I'll ask you to help me refresh my memory on how all this fits together, because the wind proposals that are part of a different proceeding, they were to address a certain need, and I can't remember what it was, and this is to address capacity need for 2017 to 2019. So help me understand what those other the wind proposals are doing. What was that intended to address?
Okay. Commissioner, I would say that the wind proposals don't affect a need. They represent an opportunity. Because we saw the market for wind projects really kind of driving costs very low, we decided to test whether there would be projects out there, wind projects, that if we secured them would help lower our cost to serve our customers. So the wind projects were an opportunity. We did find that there were several projects, as you recall, up to 750 megawatts that would lower our customers' costs because they would provide energy to our customers and offset higher marginal cost generation. So it wasn't a need, it was an opportunity to help lower customers' costs. Before you is a proposal to address a need. The need is to have power plants built and ready to turn on when the customer demand is such that it's needed. So it's two different types of things, energy and demand.
Okay. But they aren't entirely unrelated, if I'm understanding this correctly, because the wind, a lot of this need is reserve margin directed by MISO.
or some of it, what we're addressing today is to make sure you have the right reserve margin, right? And MISO will give you, what, 13% for all that wind? So does that, do those wind proposals somewhat decrease your need for the 2017-2019, the capacity need, to the extent that MISO will allow you to account a percentage of the wind?
Commissioner, my understanding is it does not. The wind does not, because even if we get capacity, we expect to get capacity accreditation for that wind after this time period, that it would come, but it would be later than 2019.
I see. Okay. I think that's all my questions. Thank you.
Mr. Christman.
Thanks, Your Honor. What's in 2017 to 19 that's so special? You know, is it just kicking the can down the road that the economy in your region, not in North Dakota, but in your region is bad right now? No reason to see it's going to be real good next year or the next year, but we hope by 17 to 19 it's better? Or is there something really definable that causes you to have this recognized need in that time frame?
Commissioner, it's a part of how we try to forecast what the future is so that we can take steps to be ready to meet our customers' needs. And we have, you know, long lead times. Typically with natural gas combustion turbines, the lead times are probably the shortest of any infrastructure, you know, that we add to our system. But it's just part of how we go about our business is we're always forecasting out over time, 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years, so that that forecast tells us decisions we should start making today or actions we should start taking today. As to what's actually driving that demand or that capacity need in 17 and 19, my understanding is it's, although the economy's been sort of soft, we do see growth continuing. The effect of the MISO reserve margins, what's required there plays in there as well. But I think it is just, you know, steady sort of growth. It's lower than we thought it would be a year ago. That has dropped further because of economic conditions and some of the uncertainty around how MISO will calculate the reserve margin. But it's our best view of what our customer needs, our system needs will be in that time frame.
I have a follow-up to that. I was going to ask this to Steve or Jim, but I'll throw it out here for you. And I'm looking at your resource need assessment in the chart that's included. I think it's in Jim Alder's supplemental testimony. And it shows a growth in your peak projected from 2017 to 2019. Do you break that down as to where that growth is coming from? I'd be curious if North Dakota is driving that growth. Do you break down where the load growth is?
I think that is a question for Jim Alders.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll ask him. All righty.
Okay. Mr. Zinser, anything else you want to follow up on with this witness before she steps down?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong? Give me one more. Mr. Norelli, you have something?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why don't you go
have
first?
A question. Ms. McCartan, you had made a comment about this may be prudent in the future. If the company is before the commission today saying this is prudent, this is a prudent acquisition for 2017 to 2019, could you say it would also be prudent in 2023, 25, 10 years down the road?
I couldn't say that because I don't know what the situation will be that far down the road.
Just a couple. I want to make sure I understand this correctly, because as I understand it, there's, with this Minnesota process, right now you're in the process of negotiating two agreements plus Black Dog to meet your need.
I don't think we've begun the negotiations. We have proposed to enter into concurrent negotiations.
That's the current plan of the first option. I mean, that's the current plan of what your first next step is, and then if you can't negotiate those agreements, then Red River Valley 1 and Red River Valley 2 come back on the table.
Yeah, generally speaking, yes.
and maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but what I kind of hear you saying is Red River Valley 1 and Red River Valley 2 are only considered prudent if we can't negotiate good enough agreements on with the other Calpine, Cannon Falls, and the other one. Is that, am I wrong there?
Well, I believe that, and I'm not sure what the right words are, but based upon the information we received from all of those bidders, we believe that the best cost options for our customers are Black Dog Unit 6 and to negotiate one of those other two PPAs. If the negotiation process on those other two PPAs shows we can't close the deal or it costs more than we thought, then my understanding is the next most cost-effective option is a Hankinson unit.
But if you do close the deal on those other PPAs, are Red River Valley 1 and 2 just off the table as far as the company's concerned?
We would say they wouldn't be needed in the 17 to 19 time frame. Wouldn't be needed to meet that identified need.
But they may be needed sometime in the future.
They're very good proposals, and as I said at the beginning, we would be very willing to work with staff and with the commission to figure out how to hold those and look at a future development.
That's all I had.
Mr. Fedorchuk.
You mean Ms. Fedorchuk.
I was waiting
I
for
hope.
That.
That's
happened
a first
to me,
step.
Too. I will say.
I said Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Oh,
wow. I heard
okay.
Mr. Okay.
I lost my train of thought here. What was I going to ask? No, I asked this earlier, and I kind of got sidetracked. Tell me what the Minnesota Commission will be doing and how what they ultimately do will influence the company's choice. They're acting on this, or you have the CAP projects in front of them and they're reviewing them. What's their next move?
It's my understanding that we will, their next move is to direct us on, to react to the comments that parties have filed. XL Energy filed comments saying we propose to negotiate concurrently with choose one of these two PPAs if it becomes good. So we were and other parties have submitted comments saying different things. So the commission's got to sort through the comments that they've received, and the next action is to direct us on what to do with all the alternatives that are before us and to respond to our recommendation. I think it kind of carrying through what the rest of that process is, Jim Alders could walk you through that very well.
But they will make your choice for you.
They will approve. They do have an approval authority, yes.
So if they approve the two PPAs and Black Dog, is this a done deal? I mean, is there any reconsidering saying, well, wait a minute, the Red River Valley is only $2.2 million less, and there's maybe some other factors, perhaps the fact I'd like to know if North Dakota is kind of driving the load growth and maybe it makes more sense. Is there any of that discussion happening with them, or is that over and done and they'll make their decision and then you guys are kind of obligated at that point?
I do think that Jim Alders would be the person to walk through that, yes.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. McCartan, you may step down.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Zimser, I guess I'd like to keep moving with the next witness and not take a break till we're done with that one. That's okay with everybody? Okay.
The company calls Jim Alders.
The man with the answers to the question.
I hope we can remember all of them.
Good morning, Mr. Alders. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
You may proceed.
Oh, you want to swear him in?
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's so darn honest.
Mr. Alders, you were here when I gave the admonition about perjury, so I'll just remind you that perjury is a Class C felony. Class C felony is subject to a maximum penalty of 5 years imprisonment, a fine of $5,000, or both may be imposed. Having been advised of the penalty for perjury, please raise your right hand so I can administer the oath. Do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Zimser.
Mr. Alders, you've been involved in both the preparation of the ADP that we're here discussing today as well as the Minnesota competitive acquisition process.
I have.
And I think there, if you could please take a few moments and help describe the Minnesota process, where the company is in the midst of the process, and how the company is working to try to fit together the North Dakota process that we're here today discussing in the Minnesota process.
The some time ago in 2007 or 8, the Minnesota Commission established a what's been called a competitive acquisition process. The Minnesota Commission requires that we go through this process instead of issuing RFPs when we identify the need for new generation. First step in the process that's outlined in the Commission order is that they issue a resource plan order that identifies the potential need for new power and new generation. And they did that in November of 2012 and then a follow-up order in March of 2013. The next step in that process is to issue notice letting any third-party independent power provider know that they can compete to construct and operate that new generation. That notice was issued, as I recall, in late February or early March. The notice let third-party independent power producers know that they could file their proposal, which is very much like a bid, by April 15th. And there were four parties that submitted proposals on April 15th. Calpine proposing the build-out of their existing combined cycle facility in Mankato. Invenergy proposing to add a combustion turbine at their facility in Cannon Falls or to build a new plant near Hampton, Minnesota. Geronimo Energy proposed 100 megawatts of solar power spread across our system at 20 sites. Great River Energy proposed capacity credits. They have excess capacity during this time frame, and they propose to offer capacity credits to meet the reserve requirements and resource requirements that we have. The process also requires then that if the utility wants to build, that it file its proposal at the same time. And as you can start to see, the reason for this process is so that the utility doesn't have the advantage of seeing competing proposals when it files. And another purpose is to set a process in place where the utility isn't evaluating and making decisions about competing proposals from others. Instead, the process contemplates that all prospective developers bring their proposal to the Minnesota Commission. We go through a contested case proceeding to evaluate and hear from all the parties on which proposals they think are best. And at the end of that process, the Minnesota Commission selects a winner. We have not gotten to that point yet. We have gone through the contested case process where the competing parties have made their case for why their projects should be chosen. As Laura mentioned, our testimony in that contested case hearing was that we thought either Calpine or Invenergy, along with Black Dog 6, would be the
most economical and most cost-effective set of resources for our customers. The hearing has been completed. The parties are into the post-hearing briefs. Post-hearing briefs or initial set of comments were filed last Friday. Rebuttal briefs will be filed next week, Friday, December 6th. All of this takes place in front of a hearing examiner who prepares a report summarizing the testimony and making a recommendation to the Minnesota Commission. His report will be issued right around New Year's. Then the matter goes to the commission for a decision on which of these five projects or which combination of these five projects that have been offered should be selected. Once that happens, then there's the negotiation phase. If the commission says, yes, go ahead and engage in a power purchase agreement with a third party, then the utility is obligated to negotiate a contract for a power purchase from that third-party developer. The commission's order specifies 4 months to get that done. And at the end of that 4 months, the utility is supposed to bring back that power purchase agreement for Minnesota Commission approval. In this case, because the Calpine and Invenergy proposals were very close, and because we felt that the ultimate outcome could be affected by the terms that get negotiated, we've proposed, as Laura outlined, to bring both the Calpine and Invenergy projects to negotiation, negotiate contracts with both of them during that process, and then have the Minnesota Commission make a final selection between the two, along with Black Dog 6, at the end of the process. Hope that helps for starters, and I'd be glad to expand.
Before you go on, Mr. Zimser, do you have NSP Exhibit 5 ready now to
provide? We do.
Provide?
And thank you.
Thanks.
Is this new?
It is the public version of Jim's testimony.
Okay, so we have this.
Your Honor, if it's okay with the other parties, I would propose to give the other parties an opportunity to ask questions about the Minnesota process before we move on to other topics.
Okay, let's do it that way. Mr. Norrell.
Thank you. Could you just again, I think you briefly touched on it, could you just tell us where we're currently at in the process?
We've completed the formal contested case hearings in the matter and are going through the briefing stage where the parties are making recommendations to the hearing examiner. The matter has not gotten to the Minnesota Commission yet.
Thank you.
Mr. Armstrong.
I'll reserve my questions till he's done with his other testimony.
Okay. Chairman Calk?
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner Christman?
Your Honor, when the Minnesota state government, as you say, picks the winners, do they take into consideration, like, economic development values or environmental issues or anything like that?
Commissioner, yes, they do. The process is designed around Minnesota's Certificate of Need rules.
Okay, so then really by allowing this process that you've laid out where Minnesota government picks the winners, it's being done in really in violation of North Dakota law.
I'm not qualified to respond. whether it is or is not in violation of North Dakota law. It's the Minnesota process for acquiring resources in affecting customers in the state as a multi-state utility. We're in this difficult spot where we have to try and harmonize the requirements of all of our jurisdictions.
Thank you.
Madam Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you. I hope this doesn't get off track, and if you want to wait and respond later, but since you're talking about the Minnesota process, why didn't the company advocate more for the Red River Valley, your original proposal?
I think Steve Wishart can give you a lot more detail, showing you how the Red River Valley units compared from a cost perspective. At the end of the day, it was primarily the issue of cost, relative cost to the proposals from the third parties compared to the Red River Valley units, and we could keep our customers' costs lower by selecting those one of those projects if indeed the power purchase agreement is consistent with their bid.
Even at $2.2 million, and maybe Steve's the one to talk about the other potential benefits of the North Dakota-based generation, but it's disappointing to me that with a cost so close, and you know the interest that this state has in having the generation and the need close to our demands, load centers, that the company didn't advocate more strongly with the Minnesota Commission for your original proposal, which I think you probably could have found some extra benefits that you could have used on the Minnesota side to advocate for that. And I'm sure there is plenty of other people advocating the opposite way in Minnesota.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate that feedback. One of the things you'll hear from Steve is that close comparison between the Hankinson units and the other alternatives relied heavily on assumptions about what the cost of gas and the cost of energy are going to be 15 or 20 years from now. And so it was a more uncertain outcome compared to what we know about what the cost difference will be in the 19 to 20 time frame. And so not only do you look at the result of that strategist model, which takes a 20 or 30 year view, but you also need to take a look at how confident you are in some of the results that that model is giving you. And Steve can give you more on that and show you some of the cost differences that were much higher than $2 million in the early years.
But didn't the other proposals rely on gas predictions as well?
They do.
And were those somehow more secure than the ones for the North Dakota plants? The prices included for the gas in the Calpine and Invenergy proposal.
They do, but the model, as I understand it, also shows some potential benefits in earlier years, and that was a judgment call on our part. You're mm-hmm. correct.
Okay. All right.
Okay, Mr. Zimser, you want to proceed with the rest of the testimony?
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Alders, you mentioned that the Minnesota process is built around the Certificate of Need process in Minnesota. The company is committed to filing ADPs, and I was wondering if you can walk through why and how the company's proposal to this commission was for the three CTs, yet the Minnesota process is moving in a different direction.
It's the issue of timing. Our commitment to the North Dakota Commission has been to file ADP applications at the same time that we're filing for approvals from the Minnesota Commission so that we can not only work with our Minnesota Commission, but we can also get feedback from this commission. And when you file both at the same time at the front end of the process, you can't anticipate what some of the outcomes of those processes might be. And so we're in this kind of chicken and egg situation.
And consistent with the company's commitments, should it deviate from its proposal to build the three CTs, it would come back to this commission and seek approvals for some other alternative proposals?
Correct. If the outcome of the competitive acquisition process is the Calpine or Invenergy proposal that would fit within our ADP commitment to the commission here, and we'd be back with those proposals in an ADP proceeding.
And so that means the commission would have another opportunity to review how the company moves forward with its resources?
Correct.
One more question before moving off of the Minnesota process. And certainly you've recognized in both this process and in the Minnesota process the qualitative reliability benefits that building generation can have in North Dakota. I'm wondering if you can just help describe how you've mention those issues and describe those issues to the Minnesota Commission and any other information regarding that as part of the Minnesota process.
The Minnesota Commission received our proposal back in April 15th, and as part of that proposal, we provided information, both qualitative and quantitative information, with regard to all three of the combustion turbine units we proposed. And we made the same kinds of arguments for qualitatively enhanced reliability associated with bringing generation closer to load centers. In that proceeding in Minnesota, we made those same sorts of arguments as we've made in our ADP application here. It's certainly not a panacea to have generation close to our load centers. The system depends heavily on the transmission network throughout our region. It is true we do not We have generation in the vicinity of load centers in other parts of our region and not in the Red River Valley, but nonetheless adding generation to the Red River Valley intuitively increases or enhances reliability, but still depends heavily on the transmission system to ensure that you have redundant sources of power to serve load. The Hankinson, when we were first looking at options for a North Dakota generation and comparing them to other places on our system, we explored doing so right in the Fargo area. But that required a long gas pipeline extension that would have cost something like $20 to $30 million, making a Red River Valley proposal that much less competitive. And so as we looked around, the best place we could find that was an intersection of gas and transmission infrastructure was near Hankinson. And that was a much more economical, cost-effective proposal as the result. Downside, of course, is Hankinson's about 70 miles from our Fargo load center, and so even Hankinson relies on the 230 kV transmission system in the Red River Valley to export its power to our system, and in the event of an outage, it would be at the end of a long 230 kV extension cord in before it could get power to the Fargo and Grand Forks area.
I have nothing further, Your Honor, reserving the right to redirect.
Mr. Norrell.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Elders.
Morning.
I have just a couple questions to start off with about your testimony. On page 4 of your testimony, which is Exhibit 5, you had stated that Calpine's proposal is to expand its existing energy center, existing Mankato Energy Center, from a single combustion turbine to a combined cycle facility. Is the Mankato Energy Center currently a combined cycle facility?
Yes, it is.
And so this would be adding a second combined cycle turbine?
The Mankato Energy Center was originally designed as a as an expandable facility. They sized the heat recovery steam generator and some of the other equipment so that they could expand the facility at minimal cost. And so they're not proposing to add a separate new combined cycle facility. They are proposing to add combustion turbines and I think steam turbines to take full advantage of the rest of the equipment at the site. Mr. Ford can give you a much better description of what that actually is.
Okay. And just to clarify too, the project that the company is negotiating with Invenergy, is that only the Cannon Falls proposal or is that Hampton as well?
Our proposal is to negotiate for the second 150-megawatt unit at Cannon Falls with Invenergy.
Do you happen to know what the proposed in-service dates are for the Calpine and Invenergy projects as outlined in their proposal?
Yes. The proposal offered by Calpine is for a 2017 in-service date. The proposal from Invenergy is for a 2016 in-service date. However, both parties have indicated willingness to discuss in-service dates as part of negotiation.
What would the proposed in-service date be for Black Dog 6, I should say?
In our original proposal, we provided the flexibility. We said we could put the unit in service in 17, 18, or 19. And suggested that the in-service date should be selected based on the best combination of resources that minimized cost. And so in evaluating proposals, we found the best combination so far to be putting Invenergy or Calpine in service in that 16-17 time frame, and then putting Black Dog in service either 18 or 19.
Do you happen to know how long the term of the PPAs that are proposed by Calpine and Invenergy?
I believe they are 20 years, but Steve Wishart could confirm.
And there's no concerns over the variability of gas prices over the length of those contracts, but there are with Hankinson?
I think there's always important to consider the risk of gas prices in the future not being what current forecasts project. It's not so much variability as it is how accurate are our forecasts today about what might happen 10 or 15 or 20 years from now. the analysis, as I understand it, and Steve Wishart can give you more detail, the analysis of the Black Dog, or I'm sorry, of the Hankinson units relies heavily on the out years of the analysis. The analysis of the two proposals that are competing with it, less so.
Do you know how long the expected life would be of the proposed CTs, all three of them?
Typically, it's 25 or 30 years from a depreciation financial perspective. The units, depending on how they perform and how they are maintained, may be able to operate longer.
You brought up financial issues, and it, or from a financial standpoint, it jogged my memory here. In Mr. Wishart's testimony, which was provided as a schedule to your testimony in North Dakota, and I'm talking his Minnesota testimony, I apologize, and this might be more appropriate for Mr. Wishart, but there's a concern addressed with what would be termed a capital lease and that how that could adversely affect customers. Are you familiar with that at all? Can you address that issue?
I am generally familiar with the issue. Projects like this, like those offered by these third parties, Invenergy or Calpine, depend heavily on the power purchase agreement that they enter into with the utility in order to be, for the project to be financed. And so in many respects, they rely on the utility's balance sheet to back whatever financing they need to do. And as I understand it, accounting rules, as the result, require that major power plant or major PPAs, like would be in this case, need to be recognized as leases under some circumstances. And the circumstances have to do with how much control the utility has over the plant, to what extent we're purchasing energy, to what extent we're purchasing capacity, and several other factors that I don't understand the detail around. And if it's categorized as a capital lease, the PPA is recognized as debt to the utility, which changes our capital structure, which has the potential to create cost for customers if the cost of our debt goes up. And so we look very closely at the capital lease issue in negotiation with other independent power suppliers, and we try and structure that PPA so that we don't have that kind of problem.
What would be some of the triggers for capital lease?
I don't know the details of what those triggers actually are.
Would Mr. Wishart, or is there another witness who could? Or?
Steve might be able to help you a little more than I can, but if this is a significant issue, we can get some of our finance people to get you information.
I think the concern would be, the question is, even though it might look cheaper on paper, could it end up hurting customers in the long run because they're paying more for it?
That potential problem exists. We've been successful in structuring PPAs to avoid the problem in the past, but that's one of the reasons we are recommending that both Calpine and Invenergy go to negotiation before Minnesota makes a final selection, because this capital lease, if we can't overcome it, could have a significant effect on the PPAs.
On page 7 of your testimony, which again is Exhibit 5, it shows a need of approximately 307 megawatts in 2019. On page 9 of your testimony, there's another table that shows kind of all of the projects compared. And it looks like the Invenergy Black Dog project would be about 358 megawatts of capacity, and the Calpine and Black Dog combined would be 486 megawatts. Is it possible that the outcome from this negotiations leads to too much capacity?
Well, anytime you add generation to your system, it comes in increments associated with the size of the generators. And so you're never going to perfectly match available unit sizes of generators to 307 megawatts. The incremental addition of generation is lumpy in large increments. Typically, the economies of scale apply to generation, and it's the size of the units help keep the cost of energy from those units lower than smaller units. And so, yes, it's possible that we will have more generation than would be required by demand and reserve requirements. But the good news is you'll just have a more robust generation system that can respond to circumstances better than having less generation. It's not a matter of having too much. It's a matter of finding the most cost-effective way to meet the threshold, even if by acquiring additional generation you're above that threshold.
In both your testimony and in Mr. Wishart's testimony from the Minnesota case that was provided as a schedule to yours, there's discussion about the MISO reserve margin changing, that there could, it looks like it may reduce the company's need to only 26 megawatts by 2019. Can you give us any odds as to how much confidence you would place and whether or not MISO is going to change this, or what are we looking at there?
I believe Mr. Wishart can get into a lot more detail. Let me just say that I think the reserve margin calculation is in flux, and based on what we see today, it's probably going to be lower than what we anticipated going into this process. But you can't count on that. When you're in the business of providing electricity to customers, you've got to be in a position to meet demand regardless. And you can't store the electricity, at least not cost effectively. And it's an instantaneous demand, so you've got to be in a position to meet customers' needs. So that causes us to be very cautious and conservative when it comes to adding resources. Now, the flip side of the coin is, can we deploy generation? Can we line, first of all, can we line up generation to meet that 300 or so megawatt need? But then on the flip side of that, can we do it in a way that we can delay some of that generation if new information indicates that we really don't need it? And the only reason we do that is we can save our customers some money by deferring major capital commitments a year or two. So it's very advantageous to customers to do that as long as we can maintain reliability of the generation to serve the entire system. So it's a balancing act. That's why We've put together a proposal that meets the anticipated 300 megawatt need. At the same time, we've strongly recommended that we include some flexibility in any power purchase agreement to defer or even cancel units if new information says that's the right thing to do for our customers.
Earlier, when we were discussing the in-service dates for Calpine and Invenergy, it sounded like the company would be willing to enter into these agreements, and the Calpine and or I guess it would be or Invenergy unit would go online first. Then the company would be willing to defer putting in its own, updating its own Black Dog 6 or installing that unit. Is that correct?
With regard to Black Dog, you are correct. We have proposed flexibility around placing that in service. We've recommended that we go back to the Minnesota Commission in the fall of next year with an updated resource need assessment. We've recommended that we do that again in 2015. We have also said to the Minnesota Commission that there ought to be provisions in any contract with Calpine or Invenergy allowing us the option to delay their plant as well or even cancel it if the need completely disappears. We recognize that they're going to have to have some cancellation fees to cover whatever commitments they make up until a certain time. But that flexibility has the potential to provide our customers quite a bit of benefit, so we think it's important.
When you'd said you'd committed to the Minnesota Commission to file a resource plan with them next year, do you know when that will be going into the commission?
As a matter of fact, the Minnesota Commission will decide when our next resource plan filing will be required at their meeting next week, Thursday.
So will the negotiations with Calpine or Invenergy, will they have, what kind of impact will they have on the resource plan?
Well, if the outcome of this competitive acquisition process is to establish, you know, 350 or 400 megawatts of new generation, that will be taken into account when we evaluate when the next resource need starts to surface. We will also then have to take a look at what impact the flexibility I talked about might have on future acquisitions.
So will the negotiations drive the resource plan then?
Not necessarily drive the resource plan overall, but yeah, it will have an impact. And as the Minnesota Commission recognized that, and they're currently talking about requiring us to file our next plan no earlier than May, and perhaps in July.
What's the company's plans going forward for keeping this commission advised and up to date with the negotiations? How is that going to work on a practical level?
The commission and the staff will have the benefit of orders coming out of this next step in the Minnesota process where they agree or don't agree with us on which projects to take to negotiation. I think we can be very flexible in providing progress reports to this commission as we go through negotiation, if you would like. And at the end of that negotiation process, we will be filing the power purchase agreements that result from negotiation with Minnesota Commission. We can do the same for this commission, along with our perspective on which should be chosen. Or if we're unable to reach satisfactory terms, why our Hankinson proposals should be reconsidered.
One last question on the Just a second. One last question. On page 9, you've got the table of the top 20 proposals in this matter. I looked through these 20 plans. I don't see Red River 2 anywhere on here. Is it anywhere in the company's plans to build a Red River 2 between 2017 and 2019? And would all of these 20 plans have to fall through before that comes to fruition?
I think Steve Wishart can give you a lot more detail about what are in these various combinations of options. I don't want to confuse the group with my higher level understanding.
No further questions.
Mr. Armstrong?
Thank you. Mr. Wishart, or Mr. Alders, excuse me. You want to just keep page 9 available to you for a few moments here anyway? As I understand it, Black Dog 6 has basically been determined to be an option pretty much no matter what for the company.
That's our view, yes, but the Minnesota Commission's not yet acted on that.
And right now where it stands with the Minnesota Commission is you're looking at Plan 1 and Plan 2, which you testified to were very close, and so we're going to probably entered into negotiations between Calpine and Invenergy to get the best price, terms.
That's our recommendation, yes.
And if that doesn't work, then I presume you would proceed to Plan 3.
We drew the line at Plans 1 and 2. We did not recommend just moving down this list of alternatives because what they represent is different combinations of generators analyzed over a long period of time. Mr. Wishart can provide you a lot more detail about why we drew the line there and some of the pros and cons associated with Great River, Geronimo, and the comparisons between the Red River Valley units and those other PPAs.
What's your understanding of why the line's drawn there?
We looked at those two proposals as having the best potential long-term benefits for customers. When we looked at the other individual proposals, for example, Great River Energy made a proposal for capacity credits. We felt the cost of those capacity credits was relatively high and didn't defer other resources for a long enough period of time to justify the purchase compared to what you can get those credits for on the market.
When you say it's for the benefit of customers, which customers are you talking about? All customers?
All customers across the 5-state system that is served by generation that we provide.
Is there a benefit to your North Dakota customers of having generation located in North Dakota?
Overall, no.
Why not?
Because we can maintain system reliability with the network of transmission that serves those customers today. And with transmission additions like the Twin Cities to Fargo line that's under construction. As I discussed earlier, there is some unquantifiable benefit associated with having generation close to load centers, depending on the characteristics of that generation.
So it's unquantifiable in what sense? In money sense?
I wouldn't know how to assign cost to the issue since outages are rare.
Taking money out of it, what's the benefit?
In the event of significant storm outages that take out the transmission system of multiple transmission lines serving a load center like Fargo, having generation that can sync up with the load in the Fargo area may be able to allow us to restore power more quickly, or may allow us to provide service to small groups of customers while restoration is taking place. It all depends on the circumstances. On one hand, conceptually, that's the case. On the other hand, if a storm so severe that it takes out three or four transmission lines that are serving Fargo, it seems to me in all likelihood there's going to be damage to the system within the Fargo area as well. So while you may be able to have local generation, you may not be able to get it to customers in the city because of problems within the city.
Well, it seems to me that those problems are going to exist whether there's generation in North Dakota or outside North Dakota, correct?
Correct.
But if there's problems that extend beyond the city, such as the lines leading to the city, a shorter line to the providing power to the city should be able to be repaired faster than a longer line providing power to the city.
It depends on what the problem is.
Well, but you're talking about a regional problem.
If you're talking about a problem that a tornado or major storm that took out tens of miles of transmission, but for some reason didn't affect, let's say, Fargo, and the transmission in the immediate vicinity of Fargo, then in all likelihood there are other transmission lines from different directions that are also serving Fargo, providing that redundancy.
Doesn't having generation close by just add one more option for getting the power restored sooner?
It conceptually, I agree. It's a matter of how much redundancy do you add to the system at what cost.
And as we're talking about cost anyway, you had testified Plan 1 and Plan 2 were very close. Plan 3 is only 0.4 million more than Plan 2 and 2.2 million more than Plan 1. Isn't that number very close also?
Over that long-term view, yes, it is.
And actually, Plan 2 and Plan 3 provide more total long-term capacity too, don't they? Than Plan 1.
They do.
I'm going to try to walk through this. Okay, Ms. McCartan testified, and in your written testimony, the need now appears to be around 300 megawatts.
That's our view, yes.
If MISO changes their reserve margins, it may be as low as 26 megawatts.
It could nearly disappear in this time frame, correct?
Help me, I don't know if you can tell my confusion from that, but help me understand then why, you know, having more power for what you said were very close additional costs is not a better thing.
Again, it's judgments about not only what the net present value of our system over the next 30 or 40 years is, which is what these numbers are. It's judgments about to what extent that analysis relies on uncertain assumptions far out in the future versus assumptions we have more confidence about in the near term.
Assumptions about what?
price forecasts for natural gas, load growth over that time frame, several other assumptions I think Mr. Wishart could help you with better than I.
Well, that's what, but I'm, what I'm trying to get at is, you know, we were here a month or so ago, and I mean, it seemed like everybody was pretty confident that the forecasts for natural gas were what they were, and were safe to assume that's about what the price was going to be. So what assumptions about natural gas, as far as these options go, are so concerning that they change your judgment call on which one is plan one, plan two, or plan three?
Again, I think you ought to talk to Mr. Wishart. I don't want to confuse the matter.
Who makes that judgment call?
Our resource planning group is primarily responsible for our recommendations, and that's Mr. Wishart's group.
I tell you what I'm hearing, and you can tell me where I'm wrong, okay? What I'm hearing is that almost to determine what is prudent, the company needs to either negotiate something with Invenergy and Calpine Mankato, and then we would have to evaluate that versus almost Red River Valley 1 and Red River Valley 2. Tell me why I'm mistaken there.
I think in large part you're correct. We find ourselves in a situation where we don't have a definitive outcome to present to you.
Because you may, I mean, hypothetically, you may be able to negotiate something with Invenergy or Calpine that the company believes is the most cost-effective option, but we may think it's more prudent for 0.4 million more to have some generation in North Dakota, correct?
Correct. The only observation I'd make is that we're in this situation where we have two jurisdictions looking at how we should add resources, and somehow we've got to harmonize them. And so early on, we pointed out that the Minnesota process is going to have a large impact on this decision, and encouraged both the commission and the staff to provide their perspective so that Minnesota could consider it as well.
So, it really is comes down to an issue of timing and if we're even ready at this point for Red River Valley 1 and 2.
That's what we tried to allude to in Ms. McCartan's opening statement. That's right.
What happens in the Minnesota process if, say, you're able to negotiate something favorable with Invenergy and Plan 1 is the choice there? Can the company still build Red River Valley 1 and 2 without Minnesota approval?
My understanding is the Minnesota Commission's order is prescriptive, that we could not, without going back to them for a change in their approval, most certainly we would risk our ability to recover costs if they found one outcome to be prudent and we embarked on another outcome.
Can you tell me the benefits of owning the generation versus a power purchase agreement?
Both can provide reliable service. The critical issue is whether we can negotiate terms in a power purchase agreement that will adequately cover risks and insulate our customers from undue risk. So both can be reliable power supplies.
I'm not asking what the benefit of both of them can be. I'm asking you what are benefits of owning the generation that don't exist when you have a power purchase agreement?
From a reliability standpoint, I can't think of any offhand.
From any standpoint.
from a operating standpoint, I don't believe there's significant differences. I'm sorry, I'm not identifying any particular ones as I sit here. Thank you for that pause. One thought does occur to me. Power purchase agreements have fixed terms. In this case, conceptually 20 years. Company-owned facility doesn't have a fixed term, and if it continues to be a cost-effective resource, we can extend its life at lower cost to our customers over time.
And these turbines that we're here with today, I mean, they have a longer lifespan than expected lifespan than 20 years, correct?
I think Mr. Ford can probably give you more information about the technology.
What's your
I point? Would assume so.
I'll just Commissioner Fedorchek had asked Ms. McCartan, where the load growth is at, and I think she deferred to you. So where do you know where the load growth is at?
The short answer is no, I don't know the particular load growth areas. I know our forecasters take a look by state. I don't know that information in this case. We roll everything up to a system basis.
Thank you.
Mr. Simpson, anything you want to redirect before I move to the commissioners?
Just a couple of quick items, Your Honor. You and Mr. Norell talked quite a bit about the capital lease issue with the Calpine proposal, I think it was. Are there similar concerns with the Invenergy proposal?
I don't believe that the concerns are as significant because it's a smaller unit, operate fewer hours given the role of peaking power on our system, but it's most certainly an issue that would need to be explored during negotiation, and we'd need to confirm that.
And I guess with the Invenergy proposal, are there other proposed terms that may cause some concerns with completing the deal, like the capital lease would for Calpine?
As you get into these large capital proposals, you learn pretty quickly that there's no such thing as a fixed bid. Parties do specify a fixed price for energy and capacity, but they often take exceptions. And one of the exceptions in the Invenergy case is how to treat transmission interconnection costs. They've made some assumptions in their proposal that may or may not turn out to be accurate when they go through the MISO interconnection process and have proposed an adjustment factor, and so that would be an important negotiation.
Would it be fair to say that there really is a lot of work to be done in these negotiations and that getting to a PPA is not really a done deal?
That is correct.
And so leaving the Hankinson plants in reserve is actually a real possibility?
Well, in my view, it's a very prudent way to proceed given the uncertainty.
You also talked about lumpy generation development.
Yes.
Just to make sure that we're clear here, while generation development is lumpy because it's almost impossible to meet the capacity need with available resources, it still doesn't mean you should way overbuild or way underbuild, correct?
Correct, and that's what we're trying to capture with the analysis that Mr. Wishart did, is to find the combination of resources, regardless of size, that will meet the resource need and minimize customer cost.
And as part of that, is that a driver as need is still in flux for wanting to have cancellation terms for any of the PPAs you may enter into?
Yes.
And then consistent with your proposal, Minnesota, the company would be willing to come back and provide whatever updates the commission or staff would request with respect to the development of need in the 17 to 19 timeframe?
Absolutely, yes.
I have nothing further.
Okay, I'm going to go to the commissioners now, and then I'll come back to the staff attorneys, and then we'll take a little break. So, Mr. Chairman Calk.
I think Commissioner Fedorchak maybe wanted a chance to talk to council, you said?
No, but I would like break if we could
take a break now.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take 10 minutes now. Using the clock in the back of the room, we'll be back at 25 to 11. Yes.
Oh.